first we have, must all pay tribute to the pink roses. I mean, I know you all are doing that, but aren't they glorious? And aren't we glad they came to be with us? You know, sometimes I remember once in our community, just over by the manager's office, there's a rose bush, or there was. I'm not sure exactly what state it's in right now, but after all the other roses had finished, there was a very tall thing like this with one rose at the top, and all the other roses were gone. And I sort of remember just walking along and then seeing him there and realizing that he was not going to appear with all the others. That he had a very special mission, and he was going to make sure that he got to do it all by himself. So I, you know, gave him the credit of just spending a long time admiring him and making sure. I mean, they're living beings, and imagine how happy they are to make themselves who they are. And they have a short lifespan, but time is not the issue. They work hard to get exactly who they are. And imagine the devas, how proud they are. I mean, it's just, there's so much in this world that speaks to us so clearly of God. Isn't it wonderful? The book that you'll see in a couple of weeks, there's a section in there where Swamiji talks about part of Master's mission to America. And it's very interesting what he says. Swami talks about how every culture, every country has salient characteristics. And some of those salient characteristics are determined by the people who have inhabited that land for a long period of time. And Swami talks about a quality of America. He said that is not unique to America, but is characteristic of America, is a passion for nature. Also, he said practicality and cooperation. Those are two other American qualities. But one of them is also an attunement to nature and an inclination to see God through nature. And he said that's the legacy of the American Indians, because their entire and whole relationship with God was very much through the natural world. And by the time the Europeans arrived on this continent, the people, as they called themselves, actually knew that they were a dying remnant of the greatness that they had known, because we were all coming down from the highest age down into Kali Yuga, and what we got to see, what our history primarily shows, is the destruction of that civilization. Master said, actually, that America is going to have to go through a very serious, much more serious economic hard time than we've ever seen. This is something he said that, quote, will make the last depression look easy. I mean, these are some of his dire predictions. And he said, it's the karma of the way we treated the American Indians, because in order to get economic gain, we obliterated them. We took their land, we took their gold, and then we just treated them like subhuman. For a long time, I thought, I used the phrase that it was also the karma of having had slavery here. But when I actually looked at it, Master didn't say that. He just said the American Indians, because it was an economic grab and we have to balance that. After that, Master said, America will stand in her rightful place, the balance of matter and material and spirit. But from what I'm talking about here, though, the American Indians had this magnificent relationship to all of nature. Much of my life has been lived here in Palo Alto, so I haven't had that opportunity that I had my first 16 years living at the village to be really with nature in the way that I like to be. Actually, after 16 years there, I never thought I would leave. What do you know? Anyway, but when I was in seclusion last summer finishing the book about Swamiji, I had many weeks in a house that was near Ananda Village. This is where this experience was. And because I was so solitary, and because it was so beautiful in summer and spring, and there was a lot happening there, I got back into that reality of what the turkeys are telling me, and, you know, just all the things that the American Indians talk about, where the animals communicate and everything is symbolic, and you just begin to understand this whole other dimension. There are all these wild turkeys up there, and some of the turkeys had their babies. Turkeys are not attractive to the human eye, and turkey babies are stunningly ugly, really. Just like only a mother could love them, you know, but a mother loves them and she's running all around and you stand there and you're thinking like, I started trying to think, or I would say basically, I tried to put myself back in my American Indian incarnations because they're not that far away from me. You know, just like, how would you see these ugly little baby turkeys? You know, what are they telling you about life, about God, about how the whole universe works? I'm just going to ramble for a moment here. I had this experience there. There's a pond on this house that where I was staying. And there, when I first came, there was a group of wild geese there. Yeah, it's the geese that are hanging around up there all the time. It was a group of wild geese. After a week or so, they all left except for one. And there was just one goose there all by himself. And he would paddle around. And when I would walk around, you know, we would kind of, we coexisted nicely. And then one day I was walking by the pond as it happened, and screaming over the treetops comes this other goose, just shouting with goose language, whatever they were saying. That was when I really wanted to know what they were saying. Comes shooting across, lands on the pond where this other goose is, and I presume they're partners. I think they partner for life. Do they partner for life? Anyway, they were clearly knew each other. They got so excited. They're spinning around each other, quack, 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 quack. They don't quack, goose, 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 whatever they do. You know, they're just spinning like this. Finally, the guy, I think it's the guy who was waiting, got so excited he just moved off and just went in little circles by himself for a minute. All this, you know, just right in front of my eyes. Then he comes back, and for about a week they were both there, and then they were gone. Like, what? You know, did she go off and have an affair? Did he go off and have an affair and now she was really giving him what for? You just really didn't know what was going on. But it was real. And it was just so vivid. And it was so not human. But it was so perfectly divine. Swamiji made the wonderful comment once that he said, he's reached the point in his life, he said, we're all beings, including animals. He said, everybody looks the same to him. We're just all egos on the spectrum between delusion and self-realization. It was always so interesting to see Swamiji relate to, he wasn't an animal person, you know. I think he didn't, I mean, Swamiji's life was always about how can I serve, how can I help. And he dedicated himself to helping those who wanted what he had. And traveling with him and watching him all over the world, he was always open completely to give to whoever he was with. But of course, a lot of people didn't particularly want what he had, even sometimes when we were in so-called spiritual company. But if people just wanted to argue or just weren't in tune, he would just become very quiet. He had no need to dominate the scene unless people were drawing it out of him. But if he was in a group of people where everyone was receptive, he would hold the stage for hours. But he wouldn't do it because he needed to. He would do it because that's what we wanted from him. But still, just taxi drivers, clerks in stores, whoever they might be. When we were visiting in Goa once, Goa is in the south of India. Let me just think how to say it. A lot of people from Kashmir, when Kashmir got into so much political trouble, a lot of people from Kashmir came down into Goa. And the Kashmiris are very good businessmen, and they have these wonderful handicrafts. And the Goans are a little more laid back. It's a tropical place. They don't, you know, they don't work as hard. They're not as driven as the Kashmiris. Kashmiris relocate. They start their businesses. They begin to become a big force. So the Goan taxi driver, he's supposed to take us to a Kashmiri shop. So he uses the ride to complain a lot about the Kashmiris all the way through. And, you know, we use the same taxi driver for several days. And at a certain point, Swami just starts asking me, starts like this, are there any handicrafts native to Goa? You know, what kind of, and he just starts a little conversation about this. And then he just starts talking to the man about maybe the Goans could kind of, like, begin to develop some of their own handicrafts, and I'm sure people would be very interested in buying them. The taxi driver couldn't quite take it, but it was just so interesting to me how Swami had applied himself to trying to think How can I help move this man forward? And, you know, for no reason. He was never going to be a disciple or anything like that, certainly not in this lifetime. But God had brought them together. And so there he was, to give what he could give. You know, this is the personification of what it is that God is asking us. You know, all of the accoutrements of religion. We have this building, we have this church, we have all these, we've managed to develop these things, but they're just a container for our ability to really tune in to the presence of God, whether it's in the ugly little baby turkeys, the beautiful pink flowers, the man or woman that you're married to, the baby that you've given birth to, or the stranger that you meet at the CVS. There's this one clerk at CVS. I don't know who he is. You know, sometimes you see people and you sort of wonder what their story is. You know, and living in the same place as long as I have and shopping at the same stores, like much of the time I go in there and there's this man. You know, you can always make up a story. Sometimes people who have a lot of potential get into drugs or alcohol or something like that. So you see someone who seems overqualified for the job that they're doing, but nonetheless it's the job that they're doing, and you sort of wonder how all this happened. This particular man, have no idea what his story is, but he has a very tender heart, and you can feel it. And every time I'm in there, and he has kind of his physical body's a little soft, not just chubby, but soft. And I think, you know, this world has probably been a tough place for him. Because you can see that he doesn't have a lot of what you would need to push it through. So he works at CVS. He's the clerk there at CVS, and that works for him. You know, and every time I go, you know, he doesn't know me from anybody, but we've probably seen each other 100 times by now. You know, you just try to think, how can I make this a little more? How can I make this just not, I'm just buying stuff from you? I used to work retail when I was in my teens. It was my sort of job. I never really had any real jobs until I got to Ananda, but I used to work in retail stores. And one person, just one person who came in and actually realized that I was another human being that they could relate to would make your whole day. You know, just to be seen, just to be recognized like that. You know, what a moment in time. We hold in our hands and in our hearts and in our words, we hold so much power. We think that we don't. We just sort of stumble along in our own inner world all the time. Maya is so confusing. I mean, Maya is so confusing. Maybe I should say it again. Maya is so confusing. You know, right now, our community, our greater Sangha, and specifically our physical community, is in a very tenuous place. We've never owned the property we live on. It's always been leased, and it's leased from a group of owner investors who are mostly our own Gurubais, but not all of them are local. And now, for various reasons, that arrangement is no longer tenable, and so a new arrangement has to be made. The obvious one is that we begin to own our own community and that we buy it. However, we live in Silicon Valley. You know, where land is priced by the inch, right? You know, and it's just like, wowie zowie, it's a whole lot of money. You know, there's so many zeros after any figure that you put up there that every time you write it, you have to stop and count them to make sure you've got them all there. You know, and investors put their money in and they know how much it's worth. We are little church mice, and we have lived on the generosity of the people who love what we're doing for lo these 30 years. So it's not like we can just go get some of those big zeros, you know, and pay for it. So we've made an offer, which we believe is a fair and respectable offer, but it's not as big as it could be. And so now we find ourselves in this very, very interesting place. And if, you know, many of you know about this already, and if you don't, and some of you are hearing this, please just contact us or anything you want. We're happy to tell you all about it. We're right in the middle, and we need your prayers. We also need your money. millions of dollars of it if you happen to have it. We can do with single-digit millions. Over 5, less than 10, but we'll take it, right? So seriously speaking, either as loans or donations, we'll take anything that we can get right now. We're taking loans at a very good interest rate in order to sweeten the deal. It's all, you know, I'm not going to give a little real estate lecture or anything like that, but I'm talking about it. I have another reason for talking about it, besides just talking about it, is I've been real nervous. You know, this is 30 years of my personal life's work, but that's not the point. The point is it's master's work, and relocating in this area where land is priced by the inch, the fact that the land we live on is very expensive is because all the land here is very expensive, and the zoning has changed, and to get anything comparable to the spacious, supportive place that we have now is, well, you can always say God has a plan, but I haven't seen much sign of his plan except to keep what we have. And then, believe me, we've tried. So the idea of relocating is a pipe dream. So we just have to stand. We have to believe we will find a resolution. We will be able to work this out. But at 2 in the morning when I wake up, it's not so clear to me. You know, at 10 in the morning when I'm sitting there, you know, reading documents and exchanging emails, it's not so clear to me. So I was out walking with Karen, who's Karen was little Kathy here just a moment ago, for those who don't know. And, you know, we were a little nervous. Maybe I'm being a little nervous right now. So she suggested to me, why don't you sing? And she specifically said, why don't you sing little Kathy? Which was, she hadn't told me she was about to sing it today at that point. She says, when you sing, you breathe. And the vibration of Swami's songs, they're healing. They're all healing. So when I was riding my bicycle to the YMCA to go swimming and started having very intense conversations with people who weren't with me, I started singing Little Kathy. And what do you know? It's pretty hard to worry and go lur-a-lur-a-lero at the same time. You know, there's all these different vibrations on this planet. And you know, at the end of the song, I just started my conversations over again, so I picked up another one and another one. When Narayani Anaya, many of you have read her book, My Heart Remembers, Swami Kriyananda. If you haven't, it's in the boutique over here, and it's a treasure. It's a little tiny book. She came into his life. She came into his life about a decade before he passed away. She followed him all over the world and eventually became, as he grew older and needed the help, she became his personal assistant and caregiver. And in the last years of his life, she almost literally never left his side, except occasionally when she had to go back to Spain to get her visa or something like that. But other than that, she was just day and night, she was there until he took his last breath. Just before she started that time with Swami, just at the time she met him, when she was 24 years old, just after she met him, she was diagnosed with thyroid cancer, very serious. And immediately, she lived in Spain, she's Spanish, and they, you know, she had to go through this huge, horrible chemotherapy. And at first she wasn't going to bother Swami, but then an intermediary said, you must tell him. He said, listen to my music. And when I visited her in Spain a couple of years ago, where she was staying, not where she lives in India with her Indian husband, but she was in Spain at that time. And we went to her father's house, and she showed me the apartment where her father lives is where she stayed when she was sick. And she took over what is usually his meditation room. So we go into this, you know, in urban apartments sometimes the places are rather small. So there's this small room with an altar. But maybe there was a window, but you had the feeling of an enclosed space. She sort of went like this, you know, her bed was over here. And she just lay there, at barely coping because of the severity of the test, and day and night listened to Swami's music. She played it all night when she slept, she played it all day. And she was healed. I mean, you could say that the chemotherapy healed her, the radiation healed her, but that's not what she thinks. She thinks that the vibration of that music put her vibration back into balance. You know, this is that Swami writes in his own book, A Tale of Songs, it's called, and he talks in there about how people talk about the transforming power of this music. And he says in there, I mean, these are not the exact words, but it's very close to it. I encourage you, he said. I plead with you. He said, don't just listen to this music. He said, sing it. Let it run through you. He said, everyone who does says that they're transformed by it. Now, this is a big plug for the music. I'm a huge fan of Little Kathy right now, you know, and it was just perfect that Karen and David, you know, presented it to us today. But what I'm also talking about, and I'm actually talking about our reading today, although I've hardly mentioned it, but what we're talking about is spirituality as a vibration of consciousness. It's not a building. It's not an affiliation. It's not outward. It's nothing that you wear. It's what is your vibration? Truth and spirit, that's what he talks about. You can have all the symbols of spirituality, but your vibration is what makes you who you are. Maya is very confusing. We are all just egos on this spectrum. You know, those little turkeys are a certain vibration of spirit. That's what was so interesting to me. Like, who are you and what are you trying to tell me? Why on earth or heaven would an individual jiva, which they are, want to be a baby turkey? Like, what are you doing? Who are you trying to become? And, you know, it's Divine Mother's looking at me, asking me the same thing. I probably look about as attractive to her as those baby turkeys look to me, you know? It's like all they see is who we are inwardly. Who are you? What are you trying to become? And how are you going to get there? And what are you going to be an instrument for? Because we are nothing but the vibration that runs through us. This is so interesting to contemplate. Someone, a Swap Master said, I believe, the only difference between a saint and the worst human being in the world is how they behave. Because there's nothing inherently different. It's that one person attunes himself to an evil vibration and acts evil. And another person attunes himself to a divine vibration and acts divine. One person attunes himself to a generous giving vibration. This one attunes himself to a greedy what about me vibration. But they're both exactly the same. And if this one switches over, he's as much of a saint as Saint Francis or anyone. And our spiritual practice is just minute by minute. What am I tuning into? Over the last weeks, months actually, that this challenge has been going on, I've run the spectrum. You know, this one has been, Master says, you don't have to get through standing up. You don't even have to get through crawling on your knees. You can just slither forward and that's still success. So I've been testing all of those different ways of doing it. But it was amazing to me going on the bicycle to be channeling anxiety and my incredible commitment to words. If I can only explain it to whoever isn't in the room with me, then you will see it my way. You know, this passion like that. And then all of a sudden, I just started singing Little Kathy. Nothing had changed except the vibration I was channeling. And of course, when I had to come back to the practical matter, it was still with me, you know? And it's still in there because I've gone back to her many times recently. But that's our choice. And what our spiritual path is the tools that allow us to change our vibration. Kriya Yoga, devotion, chanting, Swamiji's music, seva, energization, you know, nature, anything, everything that you want. But you're only doing one thing. I want to have a higher vibration, a higher, more spiritual vibration. Beginning, middle, end of the spiritual path. Maya is confusing, though. So we have to constantly renew it. I was saying to a friend who's been struggling as I have with this, failure is not actually failure. Failure is how you go forward. And progress is not a straight line. Progress is, oops, there I go again. What can I do to pull me up? Oops, there I fall again. What can I do to pull me up? It's the constantly coming back to the understanding that if I can find the right vibration, everything else will follow. That's what makes life so much fun. It's just so much fun, because wherever you are, whatever's happening, whatever you're doing, there's always a way to turn it toward God. God bless you.
Usual song for Sunday. It's called Little Kathy. And for those who might know the Luru middle part, the chorus, please sing along. Also, see if you can feel in yourself while you're singing or while you're listening why Swami recommended this song as a cure for sadness. Little Kathy went dancing. Little Kathy went dancing one day. She danced out in the garden. She danced out in the garden, her heart was so gay. La 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 lee, la la lay. Little Kathy went dancing, her heart was so gay. La 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 lee, la la lay. Little Kathy went dancing, her heart was so gay. There she saw a small robin. There she saw a small robin, it sat in a tree. Little friend, come and join me, come join me, come join me. Little friend, come and join me, come dancing with me. La 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 lee, oh la la lay. Little Kathy went dancing, her heart was so gay. La la lee, oh la la lay. Little Kathy went dancing, her heart was so gay. I'm afraid I'd look silly. I'm afraid I'd look silly,
the robin said then.
For I'm timid and tiny. For I'm timid and tiny, birds can't dance like men. La la lee, oh la la lay. Little Kathy went dancing, her heart was so gay. La la lee, oh la. La 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 lay. Little Kathy went dancing, her heart was so gay.
But you've wings you can fly with. But you've wings you can fly with, why strut like a man? Everyone can do something. Everyone can do something, it's part of life's plan.
La 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 lee, oh la la lay. Little Kathy went dancing, her heart was so gay. La la lee, oh la la lay. Little Kathy went dancing, her heart was so gay. Let's go call all our neighbors. Let's go call all our neighbors, the large and the small.
Everyone should be dancing.
Everyone should be dancing, for God made us all. La la lee, oh la la lay. Little Kathy went dancing, her heart was so gay. La la lee, oh la la lay. Little Kathy went dancing, her heart was so gay.